Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are talking. It was supposed to be hashtag fix the bill, but I don't know if it can be fixed. And I don't want to sound so cynical, but anyway, look, Martin, how are you, buddy?
Goodwill to all men. Stick your hand in your pocket, support the Tortoise Shack, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. There you go. That's how I am, Tony.
We have a Christmas party coming Friday night, guys. Come along. I believe the ladies have some good spot prizes, and we have some really dud spot prizes. So
yeah, it scares me when Caroline has spot prizes. It kind of does.
I think you're heading up to deals to get our ones, Martin. Yeah.
Yeah, they won't be out like Caroline's.
No, they won't be half as engaging, shall we say. I'm going to stop there now. But look, yeah, no, Martin's right. Look, there's a lot of content coming out this week. Huge, lots of events happening, taking place. But we'll continue to try and cover it as much as you can. And the reason my sound is probably a bit different is because my Wi-Fi has failed and I am on 4G. So apologies for that, but we'll do the best. We'll make the best of it. We'll keep going. We are delighted to be joined on the line by Sinn Féin Senator Lynn Boylan, who is part of the climate committee in the Shannon. Lynn, how are things?
Well, they were great until I came out of the climate committee. it's a battle of work at the moment.
Can I ask? Okay, so I saw the headline this morning, and that picture of Eamon Ryan and his plans to have the climate bill pushed through before Christmas are all in disarray. And I kind of thought, we only spoke to Nessa Hourigan on the podcast, it seems like only a week ago. And she even said, you know, she said hashtag fix the bill. So how is she saying hashtag fix the bill within the Greens? And we're finding a headline saying Eamon Ryan wants this true and in by Christmas. What is going on here?
I suppose I take you back a few steps. The program for governments on this climate bill, and nobody's denying that we need this climate bill. We're way behind in terms of other countries around having a proper framework. But it was kind of a cornerstone of the Greens going into government to get this bill. And I think, and that's no character assassination on the man, I think it was a bit of a vanity project to try and say within the first 100 days of government, we're going to produce this draft bill and then we're going to get it through by Christmas. And it'd be the perfect Christmas present for everybody who wants climate action. And I think that was, you know, it's a bad strategy because we want to get this right. It's something that is putting in place targets and measures that will see us for the next couple of decades. So you don't want to rush something like that. So that's kind of where it started. We were getting contacted by activists saying, pass the bill by Christmas. And certainly, you know, other Sinn Féin TDs were coming to me and going, well, what do we respond? You know, we were in favour. And I was like, do not promise anything before Christmas, because we were getting these emails before we even seen the bill. Promising that it would go through by Christmas. And I was like, I'm not giving a commitment until I see what's in front of us. So that was a big problem. And then it did come to the committee and we got a letter from the minister asking us to just give us 2 weeks of pre-legislative scrutiny so that it could be passed by Christmas. So again, in fairness to all of the committee members, I think God said, look, the Oireachtas committees are not the government, do you know what I mean? So we get to call and decide our body of work and how we're going to approach it. And in fairness, I think everybody gets how important this piece of legislation is. And we pushed back and we said, no, we're going to have the pre-legislative scrutiny. We're not reopening previous Oireachtas committees and inviting every stakeholder in, do you know what I mean? That could take for years. But we do want to hear from legal experts, from academics, from people who know about how you reduce emissions and do it properly. And we want to take as much time as that will take to do that. So that's where we're at.
To give listeners a quick overview, we saw when the pressure came on within the Greens to go into government, there was a need for this to happen on the basis that, you know, climate action had to be decisive, it had to be taken now, and we needed a minimum of 7%, and we needed all these recommendations. And the likes of Professor Sweeney in MU, Maynooth, NUI Maynooth, who I've spoken to, who he campaigned for it, he very quickly went, well, actually, this bill is crap. Like, not just him, like, you know, several people who campaigned actively for the Greens to go into government said the language was too fluffy, too wishy-washy. There was too few commitments. And it didn't actually even come up to the standard that they agreed in the programme for government. In fact, it's been levelled at this bill that the Fine Gael bill that Richard Bruton introduced was a better bill than this one.
Yeah, in some elements it was, because at least Richard Bruton's bill called for them to pursue and achieve the target as opposed to pursue. Do you know what I mean? So you can pursue for as long as you want. It doesn't mean anything in legal terms. Do you know what I mean? And like we've heard from really eminent experts coming in and pointing out very significant problems. But you're right. There was this, I don't know, is it a naive belief that the Greens can deliver, do you know what I mean? And we're going to deliver a bill and we should just trust them that Minister Ryan is going to produce this wonderful climate bill that'll be the leading bill in the world and we blindly trust him. And that's part of what, like this rush, get it through by Christmas. And then you get presented with a bill that very quickly people who know an awful lot more about this stuff than me were going, hang on, this is full of weasel words. This is drafted very clearly to avoid climate cases of the future, from holding ministers to account. I think one of them referred to it that if it was a league table of climate bills looking, comparing internationally, it's in the relegation zone of climate bills. Like, this is really bad, and there's no excuse, because you have all of the examples around the world of really good climate bills that does the job of holding somebody accountable for delivering the targets. So
Is it a deliberate obfuscation, or is it just that they were too much in a rush?
Well, in the benefit of the doubt, I want to think that it was a rush. And it was this idea of going, yes, we'll deliver the bill within 100 days and we'll get it passed by Christmas. And we start 2021 looking great. And I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt on that for the moment. I'll reserve the opportunity to come back because we have to see what we're in the process at the moment of doing, what's called a pre-legislative report. So we're compiling what we heard from the experts and what recommendations we want the committee to make around changes that should be in the bill. And I suppose, one, let's see how that's going, because we can talk about that in a minute, about the kind of talks within the committee. But also then let's see what Eamon Ryan brings back. And if it was just a case that they wanted to reach this target of Christmas, then I think they'll take on board the recommendations and do a much better job. I just scrap it and start again, basically.
But they did have over 100 days of government negotiation to put this in place. And then they had the whole summer where they weren't working, where they could have worked to put together a good climate action bill. It seems a bit strange that after all
surely the Greens should have had a ready, a best in class climate bill ready to go as they come in the door saying, here it is, we have it ready, let's go. You would have thought so. I mean, they were gung ho. This was the reason why the leadership campaigned for them to go into government.
Yeah, you would have thought that, and they have access to a lot of experts who'd happily put their hand up and go, we'll write it for you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We know exactly what needs to be in it.
Although some of them have left in the meantime, but that we won't go there right now.
But yeah, so I mean, I am, as I said, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, but whatever comes back in the revised draft will definitely decide whether or not it was just a drafting error or whether it was, you know, deliberately a bad bill.
Can I? So you've touched on the basis that within the committee itself, how is the discourse and what are the feelings towards it? Because I'd imagine, you know, it's cross party and it's broad, and you know, we've seen it. Unfortunately, we've seen situations whereby there were flawed bills, such as the forestry bill, and the government have quickly used the guillotine as the term is used to push these things through, without proper debate, negotiation, oversight. And we saw it again with one of the finance bills that was done when Mr. Darcy decided to go in and out. So we've seen those sort of things, you know. What's the actual discourse like within the committee?
It started to take a turn for the worse, which is a bit disappointing, because, as I said, we all collectively pushed back against Minister Ryan and saying, no, you don't get to dictate how much pre-ledge we have. We get to decide. We get to decide what experts. I mean, myself and Alice Mary Higgins sort of, we did a lot of work around finding the best experts, you know, and putting forward names of people who are, you know, eminent in their field. So there was no politics at play. These are the leading experts on these issues. And, you know, and we agreed we weren't opening it up to stakeholders, even in the basis where we would love to bring trade unions in to argue around just transition. We said, no, look, if you do that, then you might have to bring in, you know, agricultural organisations and that. So we said, no, we'll keep it absolutely to the experts. And so we got agreement on that. Then, you know, in the public sessions with the experts, everybody engaged, you know, everybody's genuinely interested in fairness on the committee. But we've had a report done. We're now working through it. We've added amendments to the body of the report that, you know, we think expert testimony isn't reflected in it. But like we've worked, I don't think people realise we've been meeting every single day pretty much for the last number of weeks in private, 3-hour meetings, 2-hour meetings. We've gotten to a point where we thought we had agreed a lot. And unfortunately, today it seems that now everything is back up for negotiation. So it really feels like Brexit, you know, and very, very frustrating that, you know, you're sort of going through Word and going, hang on a second, we agreed this like a week and a half ago. And now certain members of the government parties are trying to unpick that. And these reps who haven't put in amendments on that section are now tearing apart this that we've carefully come to compromise wording. I mean, like, what we would like to see, I'm not speaking on behalf of the other members of the opposition, but the approach we took was we would really like to see the committee bring a joint report. One that is a consensus based. It won't be perfect. It won't be as far as what it would be if you were writing it yourself. But if it comes from the entire committee, then it sends a very strong message to the minister. You need to fix your bill. And that's what the approach we've taken. And we've compromised on lots of stuff. And now you're getting that those compromises are being trying to unpick further. So I think tomorrow is going to be a turning point. They're either going to come in and be constructive or else I think then it's looking increasingly unlikely that there won't be a consensus report coming out of the committee, which would be really, really disappointing.
And does that mean then that they get to ram it through with numbers the way they want it to be?
Well, you see, they have the numbers, so we've said that to them. I mean, we could just sit like, but we are trying to work with you. We're trying to be constructive. We're trying to find compromise wording. We've agreed, you know, where there will be issues we'll dissent on around the ambition targets and that. But in the broad sense, we'd like to have a report that broadly reflects what the experts said. You know, so, the key problems with it. If they push it to votes, you know, and then it's a case of, right, okay, so the government members of the Joint Directors Committee basically agree with the government and the opposition disagree. It undermines what we're trying to do, which is to get the minister to change to fix the bill and to listen to the concerns.
And a non-partisan approach, of course, is a much better approach. It gets everybody involved and everybody behind the bill. If it's a partisan approach, then it makes it a point of conflict, which kind of makes it pointless. It just leads us back down that road of who's going to pay carbon tax and, you know, everybody's going to be pretty peed off. It's just a rise in carbon tax with no commensurate obligations on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, and look, we've repeatedly pointed out that, you know, we know you have the numbers, right? You know, like we can take this. Our problem is like when it gets to amendments at the bill, it's going to be much, much harder for the opposition to change anything. So when this comes to the Dáil, you know, they absolutely have the numbers. So in the interest of, if you genuinely have listened to the experts, which I think they have, and you want to take on board what they're saying, then the Oireachtas Committee report is a vital part of that, of ensuring that you get the changes now before it gets into that adversarial politics of the Dáil chamber and the Seanad chamber where, you know, we can all, like I can call for like carbon neutrality by 2025. I mean, we can all go down the road of trying to outdo each other. But that's what I'm saying. The approach we're trying to take in the committee is let's pull together.
Two things, Lynn. Sorry, just Okay, so one, you were when you were an MEP, you campaigned on climate a lot. Okay, that's fair to say that that was your, it was one of the things that you were really passionate about and actually really active in. So just in if there was a couple of things that you were satisfied that were fixed in the bill, what would they be straight off the bat?
I don't think we'll get an agreement on the target. Do you mean? I think, because look, I don't think the government members will deter from that. But what I want, without, like, you can't support a bill that doesn't have interim targets, that doesn't stop how, like, kind of a way and check your progress and make sure that you're actually on the right trajectory. So that's a key part of it. The having a ratchet mechanism, do you know what I mean? So that at least if we don't have the ambition we would like now, that future governments can't backslide further, you know, or they can go more ambitious if that's what they want into the future. You know, the stuff around a just transition and having it clearly defined and making sure that a minister has to have regard to it, as opposed to, you know, give it some consideration or in the opinion of. So I think and the stuff around climate justice and public participation, like, but the interim targets are key. The pursue and achieve, we're all in agreement. I think that's fine. That will be reflected in the new bill if there wasn't much dissent on that. But it's about the binding language and that idea that you have the buck stops with the minister, you have the interim targets, and you have a process where if you're not on track to meet those targets, there's a stop point and a recalibration that, you know, a minister has to come forward and go, look, we're not reaching it, but here's the plan and here's how we're going to get back on track.
Wasn't the plan pre this government forming that no matter what happened, they were going to have, you know, ultimately each department would have its carbon budgets, and if they didn't stay within them, there'd be penalties and there would be issues like this. And then when you hear the language like, you know, pursue as opposed to actually achieve, and you hear this, the language that just gives the, you can slip out of it because there's no accountability ultimately. Is that where we're really coming up against this, where the, what's happening here is it's not so much that the basis of the plan is bad. It's that the outputs of it, the inputs are okay, but the outputs are potentially, there's no accountability if you don't achieve them.
No, there's nothing. There's nothing to stop you not achieving the targets in the current drafting. And also there's no clear person who's responsible. And like this was argued, you know, we've had a discussion in the committee going, yes, there is. It clearly states it in the bill. And I'm like, it really doesn't. Because I said, even the civil servant who came from the Taoiseach's department, she said one thing. To me, another expert, and you're now arguing that it's the minister who's responsible, whereas the Taoiseach's, one of the senior civil servants was like, no, the buck stops at the Taoiseach's office. So I was like, if, you know, if you're not getting that joined up approach now, that needs to be really clear. So like, you know, in the British Climate Act, it's the Secretary of State, do you mean? And that's the clear line of responsibility is there. And it's just really badly crafted. But, you know, it's that vagueness that, you know, if you can have two different people saying, no, the minister's responsible, no, the Taoiseach's responsible, by reading the same bill, well, then that, you know, that's a big problem.
I would argue that's perfect from a political point of view.
Well,
I
mean, from a civil service point of view,
yes,
Johnny.
Yes, exactly. If you can have it as vague as you can, that you can both, it was like when they walked away from the programme for government and the wheels started to come off the green juggernaut, is when people who are reading it were reading the potential programme for government and both reading it into their own favour. That happened quite a lot, if you recall. Like, you know, this guarantees 7% a year. And I was like, yeah, but then the next sentence is, by on average, you know. So you could read it whichever way you wanted it to be read, and you could interpret it whichever way you wanted it to be interpreted. And unfortunately, this leaves us in a state of limbo. Just the last thing on it, and again going back to your own experiences within Europe has moved towards, you know, wanting to see us move our economies to a just transition to a green economy. Are we really basing our Ireland's part on that, on this kind of, even within the Greens, they're not happy about it, this lackluster bill?
Yeah, I just think there's a unique opportunity to get it right. and to have a really, really good climate bill. And look, as I think it was Dr. Andrew Jackson said in his presentation to the committee, it serves nobody. Like, you know, you can see where there's wording that's trying to remove the opportunity for a climate case of the future, you know, so that the minister has regard to. So you go into the court and go, yeah, of course, Your Honour, I had regard to it. I just chose to ignore it. Or it was my opinion that this was ambitious enough, but, you know, that's someone else's opinion might think otherwise. So, like, but the point he made was, what are we trying to do? Right. And one is, like, are we trying to avoid taking the action? And people will say, no, we're not. Do you know what I mean? And the government, the minister will say that that's not what they're trying to do. So why draft a bill that's so badly designed? Because you're never going to prevent, like, it looks like it's crafted to try and prevent legal cases, but you're not going to prevent people from challenging it in the courts. And equally, you're not actually going to deliver the emissions reductions, which is what this is all supposed to be about. So
it's a bit of a three-headed horse, really, isn't it? It's, you have civil servants on the one hand who want it very ambiguous. You have government politicians on the other hand who want it to be unaccountable. And then you have the actual core of what it is, what the opposition is looking for, is something that will work into the future instead of being an ambiguous and unaccountable bill heading forward, because it's the next administration that's going to have to do the loading. I mean, the on average means they're going to kick it out, and whatever next administration comes through, they're the ones then who are going to be under pressure to apply these the carbon tax at much increased rates at the back end.
Yeah, and I think, look, if everybody is genuinely wants to have the emissions reductions and take the climate action, then it should be in anybody's interest to have a legal document that actually compels you to do it, because that makes it much easier when you're going into your cabinet to argue that we need to do X, Y, and Z. I mean, because this bill ties our hands to having to do it. That should be in the interest of anyone who is genuinely committed to climate action. So, you know, and that's one of the things we've been talking about in today's meeting, is we're not casting aspersions on this government, right? We can criticise them all we want, but this is about future-proofing the bill. Because we don't know what the next government is like. We don't know what the next government policy will be. So if we want the climate action, then we need a robust, solid bill that does tie the hands of any future administration from backsliding or from not delivering the action that's important. I mean, the reference to, like, in the, you know, must have regard to government policy. Mm. Well, like, what if we get a climate denial government that comes in 10 years' time? Do you know what I mean? And people can laugh and go, well, that's not going to happen. But we're looking around Europe at some of the governments that have come in. You know, like, so you're trying to future-proof it. But I think there's a little bit of sensitivity on the part of some who are kind of going, oh, what are you trying to say about, like, we're trying to hoodwink the public, or we're trying to avoid accountability. And you're like, no, no one's saying that. What we're trying to do is actually create a bill that's fit for purpose that prevents someone from doing that. No one is saying you're trying to do it, but we don't want anybody to be able to do it between now and the target date.
It comes down to that in much of our thinking in those four-year, five-year cycles, that we think of things in terms of actually, you know, putting it out. And if you're going to, like, it was one of the reasons why, at least when Sláinte Care was pitched, and it's been, it's been slow to do anything, but when it was pitched, at least it was multi, you know, it was going to be over 10 years, 20 years and going forward across party. And this needs the same sort of level of thinking, clearly. I'd be very interested to see what Eamon Ryan comes back with, because I have no doubt that, and Martin might laugh at me now, but I've no doubt that there are going to be members of his own party that are deeply unhappy with that, because they have voiced their opinions already. They've seen that they've lost a lot of things. And, you know, there's no, if the price of going into government was climate action, and you come back with this bill, it's just not good enough, and it's simply not going to be acceptable to their own membership. As much as they're happy with the, you know, some infrastructure, but it worries me when I saw the tweet saying, Eamon Ryan saying, cycling and walking was the backbone of a just transition, and I'm thinking, you know, is that the height of your ambition? And I'm sorry to personalize it to Eamon, but that's just where I'm going. Martin, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's what it sums it up for me, is the lack of ambition. And it strikes me that the Greens have fallen into the same trap that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael consistently fall into, in that they're ambitious to get into government, but not to do anything once they get there. And I think the Greens have fallen into that trap, that all their ambitions have gone into getting into government, but they've no real ambition to make a just green transition.
And can I come in just around, because the cycling infrastructure, which I know they get a lot of flack for their cycle lanes, but I am one person who would cycle if there was good night lanes from my house into the city centre. But another key part, when you were asking about red lines in the bill, is around the protection of biodiversity. And I think this is something that, you know, a lot of people, if they're not following this very carefully, don't understand that while we have a biodiversity emergency and a climate emergency, they're not the same. And that while climate action can help prevent biodiversity loss, a certain climate action can actually make it worse. And that's one of the key things. And I know, like, we've argued very strongly for that, like, in Ireland, you referenced the forestry bill. Like, we've an approach to forestry here, and people go, oh, plant trees, it'll be grand. But actually, our managed forestry is a net emitter of carbon, you know, and it's not benefiting biodiversity. So that's another key red line that we want to see in the bill, that you have to take account of the biodiversity, both the directives and the biodiversity strategy of the government when you're making your climate action. And the same with the nature-based solutions, that they have to be forced to consider those and to give a good reason why they're not using them, as opposed to using the hard engineering. So there's a couple of areas in the bill that we want to see that referenced. And I think that there is a body of work to explain to the public that they're not always the same, you know. And like, for example, the Mid-Shannon Wilderness Park, you know, and Bord na Mona want to put wind turbines on that, which is at the moment now has rare species of birds on it. Do you know what I mean? And all you have to do is turn off the pumps and it reverts back to a nature sanctuary. And instead, what we've got, and I wrote to Minister Ryan and he's refused to answer the question, and that was back in July, and I still haven't gotten a response. We're talking about putting wind turbines on a peatland and having to continue pumping the water out, do you mean, which is using the energy and also going to destroy the habitat. So, you know, it's not just about wind turbines. It's about wind turbines in the right area. It's about cycle lanes in the right area. But sometimes greenways can decimate habitats. So there's always going to be, you know, there will be winners and losers in different projects. But what we want the climate bill to make sure is that when climate action decisions are being taken, that they have to have regard to those biodiversity issues as well. And then you can do the balance and see, does one measure justify? But not consider it.
We spoke to Susie Byrne a couple of times on the podcast, and she talks about, you know, disability proofing legislation, which is really important, that doesn't get done enough in Ireland. You know, we especially when we talk about things, you know, when we're, you know, we see all of these issues around housing and stuff like that, and we're talking about, is it social, is it affordable, is it what will cost rental look like? And she's like going, yeah, but will I be able to get a wheelchair in? You know, it's like, and we need to bring biodiversity straight into that as you're having those debates. Absolutely. I'm going to leave it there on that. I do want to touch on the fact that it has been a crazy 10-15 days for Sinn Féin. Just on, in terms of the actual, and we covered this on Sunday, I don't know if you listened to it on the live show, but we spoke to Jack Horgan-Jones and we were talking about the importation of culture wars, Lynn. And I know people from your party have spoken quite well about it, about the fact that it doesn't need to happen. But particularly around the accusations I found of anti-vax and things like that, can you speak to that for a couple of minutes, if you don't mind?
I saw some tweets around the anti-vax stuff, and I have to say, deeply concerning that the way that it is kind of worded. Like, I'll be first in line when I'm entitled to get the vaccination. Do you know what I mean? I'm a very pro-vaccination, but I don't think dismissing the fact that people might have questions is a good way to go. And I certainly don't think that party politicizing vaccination is a good way to go, because we've seen what's happened. We've seen it in the North around masks. We've seen it in, to an even greater extent, in the States, where whether you wore a mask came down to whether or not you supported Trump. And I think that's a very dangerous territory to go into. You know, that poll on the vaccination, probably a very small sample size, but like, look, you know.
Well, the question wasn't great either.
The question wasn't great.
And the question was quite kind of like, if you had any concerns about vaccines, you would have answered no on it. And that would also, to my mind, as someone who was very pro, I'll take two. Just let me go back to the diggers.
I want all three.
let me go back to. But at the same time, you would have that ability where you'd be able to say, as Martin has said on this podcast, actually, why rush like the UK? Let's do our diligence on it.
Yeah, and I think as well, I was listening to, was it On the Record at the weekend, and someone was talking about the PR stunts and whether it is or isn't a good idea that, you know, the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach will all be filmed getting their vaccinations. I'm normally one who doesn't like those sort of PR stunts, but I think on vaccination that is actually important. So I think you can listen to people's concerns and try to address them. That's for the public health experts to do, not politicians do. I mean, public health experts can kind of allay a lot of the fears. But I'm always mindful of the time that I think it was Sherry Blair refused to say if her son had got the MMR vaccination. Mm. And that had a big impact on vaccination uptake in Britain. So look, you do need sometimes that political leadership, and it's not about party politics. But if all of the party leaders went on to the Late Late Show on a Friday night and got the vaccination, I do think that that's probably a good message to send out to the public. You know, we're all prepared to get it, and we're all prepared to put party politics aside, because this is about public health. So I'm really, really concerned if it's going to be politicized around vaccinations, because that's a worrying area to be straying into.
Well, I actually think it's heading down that route, and I think it's a dangerous route to head down. I agree with you. Let public health lead the message. Once it has done its due diligence through the processes, you know, then for all intents and purposes, it's as safe as it's going to be. You know, and no medication is 100% safe, but we take medications all the time that aren't 100% safe, and we do so knowing that in the knowledge of doing so. I have no great problem with it, as long as, not like the UK though. I think what the UK have done is detrimental. It's not helpful. Rushing ahead and not letting the due diligence be done, not letting public health take the lead.
That's political, Martin. That's purely like I mean.
Oh no, I think if you've got to let the public health take the lead, let them put the rubber stamp on and say this is fine for the public, then say, yeah, great, we got first access to it, we've rolled it out. Then that's all great, but not until you have had it signed off by those who need to sign off on it.
Look, I don't really have many more comments on it, other than I do think what's happening in the UK. We have Brexit, we have this vaccination. So he's got win one, lose one, and he's hoping that one will wash the face of the other. Lynn, look, thanks for your time. We will be in touch. We hope that we get some actual traction on this and some accountability on the bill, because it's really crucial. People don't get this when they're probably listening to this podcast. You're years banging this drum. You're years banging this drum, and it's not like it's new to you. So in fairness to you, you've been calling this out, you've been calling about natural solutions, you've been calling about how we need to, you know, damn the geoengineering, and we can just actually do these things properly. So you've been a real advocate for it. And I'm glad that you're now doing it in the Shannon. And you know, it's funny, here we are now speaking in defense of the Shannon all the time, Martin. We need to stop.
Yeah, that's dysfunctional doll though.
Apparently it's very adversarial. I wasn't there the last time around, so like, I know that the Sinn Féin senators are saying to me, God, it's a very different Shannon to the last time. Like, yeah, it's very adversarial, you know, we win nothing. I was like, that's the European Parliament for any lefties. This is nothing new to me. I'm used to every amendment being rejected.
But doesn't it show the difference between a majority government and a non-majority government? Non-majority governments tend to have more consensus building, whereas a majority government just rams it home.
Yeah. I mean, and see, for me, this has been a real eye-opener, because I wasn't in the Oireachtas beforehand, and I went into the European Parliament, and now you're working your way through how things operate in the Seanad and how they draft legislation. And I tell you, it's eye-opening, the speed at which this government are trying to push through technical legislation is eye-watering.
Lynn, it was only Thursday when Michael Darcy stood up and said he thought this bill was great, and Tuesday when he was taking a job with the guys that it was going to benefit, like, and you know, that's pretty quick.
it doesn't serve anybody. You know, I don't know what they're trying to achieve by doing it, because it's like with the forestry stuff too. I mean, all you're going to do is leave it open to more judicial review. Because if you didn't do your job in the first place, it's going to be challenged in the courts.
It's a box-ticking exercise, really and truly.
Yeah, like, I mean, whereas, you know, I have my criticisms about the European Parliament for lots of reasons, but how you draft, like, the likes of the report we're working on now, or motions or resolutions, or even working on technical legislation, you compromise, do you know what I mean? But you all sit around the table in a calm, like in the proposition, and actually trash out, you know, can you live with this wording or that wording? And it is much more consensus building. It's been a real eye opener, and I don't understand the logic behind trying to fast track, fine for public health emergencies, but, you know, when you're dealing with climate action, or, you know, dealing with the forestry backlog, when we know it's because there's an issue with how you issue the licenses in the first place, you're not fixing the problem. You're literally just making the problem worse, and it's going to end up in the courts and get dragged out and drag everybody backwards rather than achieving anything.
Lynn Boylan, Senator Lynn Boylan. I was going to say MEP Lynn Boylan, but Senator Lynn Boylan, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us again today. Really appreciate it. And we will be, well, as I said, we will be back in touch, I'm sure, as the next few days are going to be quite kind of crucial, and we'll see how things develop. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Lynn.
Watch my Twitter feed. Is there white smoke or not?
Absolutely. Martin, can you hang on for a minute?
Will do, buddy. Chat.
Thanks. Lynn, cheers. Thanks very much.
No problem.
Thanks, Lynn.
Bye.
See ya. Bye. Look, Martin, interesting as always. Lynn, and I know it sounds a bit weird, but I'm actually looking at my bookcase, and you know there's environmental plans on the bookcase that actually Lynn helped draft in the European Parliament. So she is a serious person. Like, she doesn't talk about her own qualifications and her own ideas around this, but she knows what she's talking about. So it's encouraging that she's in there fighting, but it's also kind of off-putting when you see that she's already kind of accepted that there's going to be very limited wins.
Well, what's it going to do? It's going to keep the status quo as is, Tony. And I think that's probably the whole purpose of it.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing. And I know we kind of touched on it there, but it's been a disastrous few days for Sinn Féin. Let's call it out. We said it on Sunday. We don't need to keep repeating it, but they've had a really bad time of it.
I've kind of turned off to it, Tony, because do you know what? There are a humongous load of actual serious issues that are not being dealt with. And this is, as you and I have said before, this is kind of culture wars. It's the weaponization of gender issues. It's the weaponization of all different kinds of issues. It's not good for public discourse. I still maintain that the most serious thing that has happened in the Dáil this year is that the former Taoiseach leaked confidential documents to her friend. It's by far the most serious thing that has happened in the Dáil. I think there's a bit of a quiet news cycle, or not even a bit of a quiet news cycle, that other news is now locked out because of what's going on.
Yeah, and I kind of think there's also an element of, as I said to you previously, and it was kind of, we saw it coming and we've been afraid of it, this idea of let's report the way they do in the US or in the UK. I mean, I put it on Twitter earlier, you know, and I saw a few people giving it quiet likes, but it was the whole, you know, pigfucker politics isn't new.
As soon as this broke off, I really thought about that. And you know, I'm not even going to go in and explain it to people. They can look it up themselves. But yeah, it's to get the denials. That's what they're looking for, is denials all the time. I can say without doubt that everybody I know is completely turned off by it, is fed up listening to it. I mean, that's right across the board on all sides. People are just completely fed. They're like, what is going on? Do we not have a country to run here?
Yeah, and I suppose no, but I will say, okay, Mary Lou had her interview with Claire Byrne. If you read it, it reads better than it sounded. I'll say that, because it didn't sound great. There was the idea of someone knocking on someone's door to take down a post. Now, I've seen Christine in the meantime has said that she's not happy with how Fine Gael have said that heavies came to her door, and that was not the case at all. It was someone from her command or before she left the party and the likes of that. So, you know, and I'm not going to speak for individuals other than to say that this has been now, as it's been weaponized, and it's kind of horrible. And I'm not surprised, though, because that's what has become of politics, has become like, you know, reported like football, who won, who got a, who scored, who didn't, who missed out, who did this. And I suppose what I'm kind of disappointed in is the people who've rushed in to engage in it. I mean, I saw the Taoiseach making a point on social media today, and you know, that's his prerogative. But let's be clear, he has an agenda as well.
You know, this is all my area you're talking about. This is all the East Ashbourne. And I know exactly what happened. I'm not even going to discuss it here. I know exactly what happened. And it is not what's been portrayed, Tony.
Yeah, it certainly isn't. And that's what's been said as well. So it's just been, yeah, no, it's ugly. And I just think people are dying to jump on stereotypes. On both sides, there's a lot of stereotyping going on, but at the same time, I do feel that there's a media frenzy to make this into something, because
I disagree that there is a pan media frenzy, Tony. There is a very select few journalists who will not let it go, and simply will not let it go. And let me say, when you say heavies calling to the door, if that heavy happens to be your neighbor of your entire lifetime, who you've known all your life, and, you know, that puts a different complexion on it.
Well, and that has been said. Like the lady in question has said, there was no question of heavies coming to the door.
No, there wasn't. It wasn't. I actually know the parties involved, and I can say to you without a shadow of a doubt, it wasn't a heavy, not by a long shot.
But nonetheless, we have, as I said, it's a PR battle.
Yeah, that's what it is. But I also think, and I do think that the government press, the new government press secretary, I think this is all part of this. We are now on tabloid government, and you can expect the next 3 years of just these tabloid, salacious nonsense, going nowhere, well, not achieving anything kind of.
Well, if I was the opposition now, I would literally, the biggest problem you're going to have now is being the person who gives them an in. And that's your biggest, because all you need to be doing is doing your job, keeping things going, trying to hold them to account, because as Lynn alluded to, it's very hard to hold them to account because they have a very big majority at the moment. But you have to stop shooting yourself in the foot. Simple as that.
I completely agree with you on that. Don't get me wrong on this. You know, if you're a politician on social media, be more careful, okay? Be more careful. You and I delete far more tweets than we ever put up, Tony. Because
my draft tweets would see me fired in the morning. There's no doubt about
it. Okay, so we're conscious that it is social media. We're very conscious that that's what it is. And, you know, we're not perfect either on social media, I'll be the first. But, you know,
I'm pretty good now, I have to say. I'm pretty good.
We're conscious enough. Where do I think this is end? I'll tell you where I think it ends. And I think they're all getting turned out. You know, the people that they're trying to win the votes, the young people who they're targeting with all of this, they're completely turned off by it. And I think the next poll is going to show that Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, the Greens haven't gained one inch from doing all of this. And it's been counterproductive. And the reason I say that is attacking the opposition has proven to be counterproductive for government all along.
Yeah.
So I can't understand the rationale to keep doing it when
there's only one. There's only one rationale, and it's to eat into Fianna Fáil's vote.
Well, it's the only one that's working. And if Fianna Fáil can't see that it's them that are the ultimate losers out of this and not Sinn Féin or anybody on the left, Fianna Fáil, it just comes back to this thing that Micheál Martin is too naive to be there, way too naive to be there.
I actually don't think he's naive. I just think he doesn't have the force to turn back the tide. I genuinely don't think he has the force to turn back the tide. I mean, that word heave is starting to come out more and more.
Yeah,
and more.
Now, I listened to Oliver Cowan on Friday, and it was very much, and you know, sometimes in comedy, that's where you're getting the real story.
If you want, like, I mean, the second best political commentary in Ireland is Oliver Cowan, like,
yeah, outside
these two gobshites, obviously.
He was very firm in the comedy that there is talk of a heave afoot for Micheál Martin.
There is talk of a heave, and there are candidates already letting it be known that should a vacancy arise, that they would be looking to take it on. And I have to say, some of the candidates have been making good media performances of late as well.
If you haven't listened back to Callan's Kicks, listen back, particularly Micheál Martin going Christmas shopping. It's absolutely hilarious. It's completely hilarious. But cutting that there.
Right, we're going to leave it there. Christmas party Friday night, folks. So it's up on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. The link is there. We are going to have a lot of crack and a bit of fun. Martin promises he's going to. Are you taking your top off or on? What's
Tony?
The
story? Look, I only take my clothes off to go to bed. That's it. Otherwise, I'm fully clothed all day. I'm not like you. I'm not an exhibitionist. Could not be an exhibitionist. It was never in me.
You'll have to oil me up and send me in. Come on, folks. Talk to y'all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin. Martin and Tony. Speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.